Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
It's your time on Her Radio. Ask your questions or comment at askher@radiomd.com. Time to ask her.
Hey, hey, this is Dr. Pam Peek. We got to ask her questions. We got some really good ones, some hot ones here. Let's take the first one right out of the news. And this is someone who wrote in saying, I just heard about the recent Johnson & Johnson lawsuit claiming the ingredient talc is linked to ovarian cancer. So what's the gig with that? Well, actually, this actually came out of an article that a lot of us read over at USA Today. And in that article, they talked about a recent issue. And that is Johnson & Johnson was ordered to pay $72 million in a talc powder-related ovarian cancer case. And wow, what is that really about? So what is talcum powder, and how has this all happened? Well, as it turns out, let's just go to the basics. What's talcum powder to start with? You know, it's made from talc, and that's a mineral made up mainly of the elements magnesium, silicon, and oxygen. And as a powder, it absorbs moisture really well, which is why a lot of people have used talcum powder in the past, you know, for babies, for down there, and all the rest of it. And it helps cut down on friction and helps keep the skin dry. And now, in the old days, believe it or not, and this is since the 1970s, talc actually had asbestos in it. Ouch! And clearly that was associated with cancer like lung disease. But ever since the 1970s, all talc has been free of asbestos. And, you know, the other thing to think about with talcum powder is that a lot of this stuff is scented. And scented all by itself can be an irritant and an allergen to a lot of people. So a lot of people like the unscented for everything that we do, from soaps to talcs and back and forth. And so now we have a question. Does talcum powder really cause cancer? Turns out it's really a mixed bag out there, as it turns out. It's been suggested that talc powder might cause cancer in the ovaries if the powder particles were to travel through the vagina, uterus, and fallopian tubes to the ovary. Some studies in women have looked at the possible link between talc and cancer of the ovaries. Again, the findings have been mixed, with some studies reporting a slightly increased risk and others reporting no risk. Many case control studies have found a small increase in risk, but these may be biased because they often rely on a person's memory of talc use many years earlier. So it's a mixed bag out there, as it turns out. However, if you go to the American Cancer Society website and others, they're all saying that talc can possibly, and I quote, increase the risk of cancer. So if I'm reading that, then I'm saying, I ain't using it. So I my general feeling right now as an expert is I don't use talc and I avoid it. I don't think that there's any reason to use it with such mixed results out there, and with the Cancer Society saying that there is a risk for increased cancer. Who needs it? We've got so many other alternatives for staying dry. How about some nice, you know, undies that actually wick? There's so many great things to use out there. And actually, talk to your pediatrician about the use of talc with babies as well, because that's something you need to have a conversation about in a heartbeat. Okay? All right. Here's the second question. What are shin splints and how can I avoid these? All right, what's a shin splint? The term shin splint refers to pain along the shin bone. Yeah, reach down there to your lower leg, that big bone right up front. It's called the tibia. It's a large bone in front of your lower leg. And shin splints are common in runners, dancers, and all kinds of people who are just sort of hammering their legs like that all the time. And it's kind of called, well, in medicine, we called it the medial tibial stress syndrome. They often occur in people, especially athletes, who've recently intensified or changed their training routine. So that means that what you want to do is take it slowly and gradually when you're changing up your routines here. Don't be, you know, hopping into something that's uber intense when you haven't been doing that for a long time. Gradually increase and try to do this under the guidance of a fitness professional as well. The muscles, tendons, and bone tissue right around that area in front of the tibia become overworked by the increased activity. Ouch. So how do you prevent this? The first thing you want to do is choose the right shoes. Wear footwear that suits your sport. If you're a runner, please replace your shoes about every 350 to 500 miles. It kind of depends, right? Consider arch supports. Arch supports can help prevent the pain of shin splints, especially if you're one of those little flat-footed people out there. All right, the next thing you want to do is lessen the impact. Cross-train with a sport that places less impact on your shins, such as, you know, swimming, walking, biking. And remember to start new activities, like I said, slower. Increase time and intensity, always, always gradually. Now, here's another thing to do. Add strength training to your workout. To strengthen your calf muscles, try toe raises. I love these things. You do it all the time. You stand up, slowly rise up to your toes, and then slowly lower your heels to the floor. You repeat that 10 times. When that becomes too easy, try to go to a lower step of a staircase. Do the same thing. This will take you past just a flat area and really strengthen them up a little bit more. So it's really important to prevent the shin splints from happening in the first place. Mucho's important. Okay, now you know what they are. Question number 3. I do cardio all the time, but don't see any results. I want to be dropping a few pounds here. Huh? What's going on? Girlfriend, listen up. You cannot outrun your fork. You heard me. You could run, you could bike, you could cycle, you can spin, you could swim, you could do whatever you want to, but I think you're doing something wrong with your nutrition right off the bat. So let's just talk about that for a second. What are you doing with your eating? When you go ahead and you do your cardio, and then right after your cardio, you go and chomp down a mountain of food, hello, you not only neutralize what you just did, you're going to gain weight that way. So be very careful about that. Eat more strategically. Number one, pitch the refined and processed foods. You heard me. Whole foods only, please. Number two, eat strategically so it's satisfying to you. So don't be eating a mountain of food after you had a workout. How about just a little bit of peanut butter and an apple or a banana? You don't need that much food, you know, not unless you just hiked up and down, you know, Everest. Come on, you're out eating it. The next thing you want to do is please, please, please make sure you're lifting weights. Have resistance training in there somewhere along the line. Don't do cardio all the time. And then add high-intensity interval training to your cardio. Don't just be, you know, looking like a zombie on a treadmill somewhere. You've got to pick up the pace, and that'll shorten the time you're doing cardio anyway, and you'll get so much more out of it, and that'll really shake up those fat cells as well. So eat more strategically, add more intensity, add your strength training, and remember, you cannot outrun your fork. So watch what you're eating here in a big way. Whole foods, and don't overeat it no matter what you do. Okay? All right. So there's your Ask Her segment. Shin splints, you heard me. You know, you're doing your cardio, but are you doing it the right way to be able to get all the results you want? And talcum powder, pitch it. Who needs it? Hey, make sure whatever you do, get more questions into us. We love it on the Ask Her segment for Her Radio. So make sure to email askher@radiomd.com. Now, like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter while you're at it. And please stay well.